Welcome to Electric Enthusiasm, the podcast where we celebrate unironic enthusiasm. I am morbidly curious about today's topic, Katie Cobalt.
Yes, and I'm Alexander Kilth, and I will try not to suck the life out of this episode.
So, Alice, can you please tell us how this works?
Yes. In each episode, one of us presents a topic that they love, but that the other host knows little or nothing about, and then tries their damn best to spread their enthusiasm to the other host and to you, the listener. Sometimes, as in this episode, we have amazing guests on who are super excited about something that we know nothing about.
And then we have the moment of meta, where we nerd out about enthusiasm itself, talk a little bit about why it matters, and why and how you can live a more enthusiastic life.
Because the world needs more enthusiasts, and you should share your enthusiasms with us on our website, electricenthusiasm.com, or our Instagram, @electricenthusiasm. Tell us what you're excited about these days. You could even plain old send us an email at hello@electricenthusiasm.com.
Yeah.
So, in this episode, we are super excited to present our guest. Pika is adjunct professor in zoonotic parasitology at the University of Helsinki and president of the World Federation of Parasitologists. She works at Statens Serum Institute in Denmark, where she focuses on One Health, zoonosis, and preparedness for emerging diseases. Sounds like a deeply irrelevant field these days. I have no idea what anybody would work with that. Pika is enthusiastic about a parasite that about one third of the world's population is hosting. You may have this very parasite as we speak, and we're going to talk about that later on. Also, Pika is yet an example of a swing dancer with a PhD.
Yep.
There are so many smart and intimidating people in swing dancing, and that's how I met Pika, and she is one of them. She's an amazing dancer and a super smart cookie. Welcome, Pika.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Our absolute pleasure. So today's topic is parasites. And on this podcast, we like to start with the facts first. So can you tell us, what is the definition of a parasite? What is it exactly?
Well, I mean, parasites are, that's a huge group and diverse group of organisms, actually. So it's not so easy to define in that way. So it can be from a microscopic little creature living inside cells to a worm living in somebody's intestines, or ectoparasites crawling on top of the host. But I think the defining thing is the lifestyle. I would say it's like a little bit unfair coexistence. So it's not totally fair, but actually a good parasite would not do too much harm. So they are not supposed to be, too much of a trouble, actually.
I really love that definition. That is so fantastic. A little bit unfair coexistence.
Yeah.
That is brilliant.
I would add that actually, I mean, there are many parasites that cause really devastating disease also in the host. So they are not all kind of the good guys in that sense. But overall, the definition is unfair coexistence.
Yeah, and there are many different types of life forms that can be parasites.
Yes.
Right? It's not like one biological type of species. It's many different species that can live as parasites.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So you said it's a huge group of parasites. Like, do you have a rough idea of how many types of parasites there are? Or is it just uncountable?
I would actually say we don't know. We cannot count them because they are in all shapes and sizes and all over the place. All the time we learn new things and we discover new parasites, give them weird names. And I mean, it's a changing field. So there's always something to be enthusiastic about.
Okay. Follow-up question. What is the new weirdest name that you've heard of a parasite? You said you gave them weird names. Let's hear some examples.
I come from Finland, so I'm used to the long words, and many parasites, their scientific names are very long, and I think that's also a cool thing. My favorite is Toxoplasma gondii. That's quite a simple name, I would say. Then there's another one I work on a lot, is Echinococcus multilocularis. That's the one I could go on, but I mean, they are lovely. This is, it's poetry.
My favorite parasite name is a kind of lice that live on owls.
Yeah.
And they can get very specific. Lice would be considered parasites, right?
Yeah, ectoparasites.
Yeah. So apparently some of them get so specific that you can actually identify the species of owl from the species of lice that live on it. And yeah, and I was reading the Far Side cartoon, you know, Gary Larson. And apparently there was a researcher that had identified a new species of lice in owls and wrote to him if he would be, you know, would he be okay with him naming this species after Gary Larson? So there is now, it's something in Latin, Gary Larsoni.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. He wrote in one of his books, he considers it one of the highest honors he has achieved in life.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm not there at that level, no.
Not yet.
So, yeah. So there is something inherently like fascinating, but also kind of morbid and disgusting about parasites. So how on earth, Pika, did you get into this field?
I mean, as a child, I was that strange little girl, just fascinated by the nature and about all things in the nature. So not like exactly thinking that something is more disgusting or gross. So it's just interesting. And I never grew up, and I hope I never will. So I think it's just, I think that the interest in nature, and especially how things are linked to each other, there's these interconnections, and that's a lot with parasites, because they have these complex life cycles, and then that's I think part of it.
That is so cool. Also, when Pika said strange little girl fascinated with nature, Kate, is that something you can
relate to? I relate to you so much right now. It's so lovely. Alex keeps bringing guests on the show who are like strange little girls who are fascinated by nature, and I'm just like, you're collecting us, Alex, aren't you? You're just finding more and more friends who all are like that weird little girl who's just like, but did you know this weird obscure fact about like African wasps? Like, that's us.
Exactly. So I was actually learning the scientific Latin names of plants and animals as a little girl. I remember that. And I remember some of those that I learned. I remember where I was sitting on a rock and reading a book. I mean, I come from the northern part of Finland. That's a bit boring maybe, so there's not so many things to do. But I really love learning those names.
Cool. That is so cool.
So how does one go from being like a weird little girl who's into nature into being a PhD in parasites? Like, what was that journey like? Did you start off in like general zoology and then like over time realize, oh no, parasites are where it's at?
I'm actually a veterinarian as an education, and then I continued in the PhD, and I selected a parasite that infects humans and other animals and has an environmental form. So it's really like has the whole thing, but the veterinary part is part of the path.
Oh, cool. That's really interesting to see. Like, I'm always interested how people wound up where they are, because everyone has such interesting paths to, like, I know, specialize in parasites. Like, how did you get there?
What are you, so working with parasites, what's some of the most interesting things you've learned? What have been some like, whoa, that's cool?
I mean, I think it's just quite amazing that we have this kind of group of organisms. It's they're really successful and they're able to adapt. And there's so much we don't know. I mean, it's a lot of that thing actually, and I find it interesting this that we talk about them often as pathogens, like causing disease. But what is that balance actually, that it's about the host and the parasite together? And if the host is not, it's often about immune compromised hosts, for example, then the parasite causes trouble. And I would also like to mention parasitologists. I mean, people who are fascinated and interested in these things, they are awesome. I mean, they all have their own little thing, and the stories are, it's a lot about the people actually too, certainly.
I would imagine, regular, boring, normal people don't go into parasitology, don't they? Do they? I mean,
they could, they should. I think that's something for everybody. Because parasites also come surprisingly close to our lives, because they are quite common, many parasites. So it's for everyone.
Yeah.
Speaking of it being for everyone, I need to know, like, we've had a whole like 10 minutes. We haven't addressed this. Alex mentioned in your introduction, there's a parasite that 1/3 of the population has. And you just said everyone should get to know parasites. What is that parasite? I need to know. I've been very good and I waited a full 10 minutes.
Well done. Well done. That is exactly Toxoplasma gondii. That is the parasite that I would say is my favorite parasite. I've been focusing on it for 15 years. So it's so cool. And actually, we often say that it's very common because it's about 1/3 of the human population that has it. But that's actually such an underestimate because it also infects our animals. And I mean, quite a proportion of many of them. And then it also has a form in the environment. So it's just everywhere. So it's really common. I would say too common too, but yeah, that's the one.
How does that parasite work? Because that has a really interesting life cycle, right?
Yes, it has. People say it's complex, but I think it's just cool. And it's been able to adapt to basically the whole world. So it always finds some hosts where it can live. So Toxoplasma gondii is one of those microscopically small ones. It lives inside the cell. Any cell that has a nucleus is basically quite okay for it. It has some preferences and it can infect humans, other animals. There's many ways for it to get to the new host. If you talk about us humans, we can get it by eating an animal that had it. So eating meat raw is a typical infection route for humans. But also we can get it from the environmental form. And that comes from cats, infected cats. They can shed it to the environment. So there's like many ways for it to go. And actually, even though we say life cycle, but it's like a chaos of arrows between hosts, how it can go to a new host.
And I read somewhere that it needs to get into a mouse to reproduce or something.
Almost correct. It needs to go for where it can have sex, the sexual reproduction.
Okay.
That's the cats. That's the cat intestines only. And the mice are, of course, something that many cats and felids eat. So it can be part of the life cycle. So in the mice, it would be inside the tissues. And then in the cats, it can then get this environmental form out and shed it to the environment. And then the next mouse could be eating that and getting the infection.
And so is it true that mice that have Toxoplasma gondii change behavior?
So the change of behavior it's been shown for rodents in some studies, and it's really interesting actually. And there is this theory that maybe that's the way like the parasite can easier get to the cats, because that would be beneficial for the parasites to get to the cats. That's rodents that are infected, they are less afraid of things related to cats and might be more active or something like that. So yeah, there are studies on this.
They did an experiment where they found that mice with Toxoplasma gondii were less afraid of like the smell of cat urine.
Yeah.
And more likely to walk across the middle of a room instead of just walking along the walls of the room. And therefore, they were more likely to get eaten by a cat, and the parasite was more likely to get back into a cat, where it can then have sex. Is that, am I understanding this correctly?
It was described as a fatal attraction.
That's fatal incredible. Feline attraction.
Yeah. And does it have the same, so studies have shown there's some evidence it changes behavior in mice. This has any effect on us, considering that 1/3 of us have it? Like, are we likely to just become very confident walking down the middle of the rooms, hanging out with cats?
There are quite many studies on that and some evidence showing that, but I would say we still don't know enough about it, but it's certainly not impossible. I mean, it is nice to go and stay in the brain tissue. That's where it likes to live in us. Challenge with those studies is often that the parasite, exactly when humans get it, usually it's a chronic infection. Apparently for the rest of our life, we will then be hosting this parasite. And then it's difficult to say, like, did you get the parasite first, or did you start that behavior first? Or maybe if you are behaving in a certain way, you are more likely to get the parasite. So it's about the whether it's a causality or not. But there's a lot of interesting research in this field, and also some links to psychiatric diseases. At least there's association to some.
Whoa.
So I don't know, but I've heard that some people say, like, if they would be positive for this parasite, they could have a T-shirt saying, like, it's not me, it's the parasite in my brain.
That is fascinating and disgusting. Mm-hmm. So what should we do about this? I mean, if you are infected with Toxoplasma gondii, there's no cure, right? It's nothing. There's nothing you can do about it.
That's why we should actually prevent the infections better and try not to host this parasite because it can cause disease. But those of us who already have it, I mean, I would say then the best thing to do is take good care of yourself because you are a home to the parasite and you will coexist with it. And as long as your immune system is working well, it will keep it in control and we assume no major problems. But it's kind of a challenge if there comes some other disease on top that causes our immune system to struggle and then the parasite can start causing more problems too. But basically, if you already have it, just take care of yourself.
Is there a test for this?
Yes. So what is super cool about this, because it is microscopically small, so we cannot see from the outside of a human or animal if they are infected. But we can take a blood sample and look for antibodies against this. And that's a good way to diagnose it and see if there is. But basically, most of us, we don't need to know if we have it. So I have been working with this parasite in the laboratory. So I have been tested because of that. And last time I tested, I was still negative. So I've been successful in avoiding it thus far.
Well, I mean, if it is one third of the population, there are three people currently on this call and you're the only one negative for sure. So definitely me or Alex have it.
Yeah.
It's just my sample size. We don't know. But on another thing, in humans that proportion of people who are positive, it goes up with age. So the older people are, they have had longer chance to actually meet the parasite and get infected. So that's another factor.
So it's Alex, is what you're saying.
Yeah, go after it. That's ageism right there.
No.
That's
key. Yeah.
And also, I read somewhere that it varies a lot from country to country.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I got that.
I think that is about our kind of cultural habits, what we eat, for example, how much there is contact to soil and the environment and so on. You mentioned the ageism, and it's actually very different in different countries, like at what age it's already quite a high proportion. And I would turn the ageism the other way, because one thing where this parasite is really, really dangerous is for unborn babies, actually. Like if just before or during pregnancy, a woman gets the infection or even old infection reactivates, that can be really dangerous. So this is affecting all ages. Yeah.
I'm curious, where are the places in the world where the percentage of people who are likely to be infected is higher, and where is it lower?
There seems to be a little bit gradient, like north, south, so that in the north, it's a bit lower. By country, I think the cultural things also affect a lot, because within Europe, for example, typically we say like France is a country where it would be very high, but that was actually like 60s, 70s, and the proportion has been coming a lot down. It depends also how much awareness there is about these parasites. Do we actively avoid the infection and so on? So it varies, but it's quite a difference by country and region.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we do? If any cat owners are listening, should they burn their cat poop, as somebody suggested on Twitter, or what do we do?
That's a Twitter, a tweet about me actually from a Toxoplasma Congress. So all the Toxoplasma enthusiasts gather every second year, and I was giving a talk about cats and Toxoplasma, because as I mentioned, cats are the really important host for the parasite, because they are the ones that can shed the environmental form, which is brilliant. It's a good idea to have the parasites all over the place. But it's really important to know that cats don't shed and spread the parasites if they don't get the infection themselves. So I would say to cat owners, the main message is like, take care of your cats. Try to prevent the infection in the cats. So then your cat will not contribute to this parasite success story. And also it is actually important, because also cats can become sick and they can even die from this parasite infection. So we should make sure that our cats are protected. And the burning the cat feces, that comes then actually from the next thing, that if we fail this prevention of the infection, then how it could go further, it is exactly in the cat feces. So it's important that they are not ending up to our environments and contaminating something we want to eat or drink. So basically, it should go to household waste. That's the good place. Or if possible, I mean, the safest would be to burn it. But that's not the solution for the energy crisis, no.
Also, I can't imagine that's a very nice smelling bonfire.
Yeah, like, yeah, don't do that at home. It's better to do the other thing. Yeah, yeah. But in the cat feces, also the parasite form that can be there, it is also microscopically small. So it's just about this that we should understand that the feces can have this parasite, for example. And that's why it's good to know where they end up.
I'm picturing the scene in somebody's home like, honey, the cat just pooped. Have you seen the lighter fluid?
Honey, the cat just pooped. All right, I'll get the logs. I'll set the fire going. start building a fire.
I'll get the old flamethrower.
Yeah. But it's actually not all cat feces. For the parasite, when it comes out from the cats in the feces, it takes 1 to 5 days before it is infected. So there's a period of like no hurry with the fire. and also like if the cat doesn't get the infection, then it will not have this parasite in the feces. So
what you're saying is you have 5 days to build the biggest bonfire you can. Okay, noted.
I would say one day, 24 hours.
I think you may be taking the wrong message away here, Katie.
So I have a lot of friends who have cats, and I now spend more time with cats than I've ever had in my life. What should I tell them to make sure their cats don't get infected, therefore I don't get infected? How can I be selfish here? What do I tell my friends?
It's not only about selfish, because it's also for the health of the cats. So, but we did actually some studies about what are the risk factors for cats to have these parasites. And one of those is if the cat goes out and hunts those mice, because that's how it could be getting it. Or also birds can have it. So if it goes out and is allowed to hunt, or also inside the house, sometimes there are rodents. So keep your cat from that. That's dangerous. No hunting for the cats. And another thing that's actually a major risk factor in our region of the world is raw meat given to the cats. So because the meat, if it comes from an animal that has this infection, then it can get the infection from that. Cats actually need meat in their diets, but I always say like it should be well done. Why would we give it like badly done? Let's do it well done. And so if it's cooked, then it's safe. Then there's not a lot of risk. So no raw meat, no hunting. That would be the two main rules for keeping cats safe from these parasites.
To be fair, hunting would also be raw meat, because the cat's not going to cook the mouse before they eat it. So really, it's just the one rule. Just don't, like, no raw meats, which is very easy to remember. I think we can do that.
And then as a bonus, like in case that fails, because maybe the cat is hunting secretly in the night. So then also take care of the cat feces, like to the household waste or.
Either that or teach your cat to cook whatever it hunts.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the best option.
Cooking book for.
I can see a cat with a little propane burner, gas stove, flipping a little mouse on it. Yeah, I can see that. I know of some other parasites that can also change behavior in the host. So there's I know there's a fungus that can infect ants, certain ant species, right?
Yep.
And then once the ant is infected, the fungus takes over the brain, makes the ant crawl up on the top of a grass straw and wait to be eaten by a bird. Also turns the head of the ant red or something. Are there many examples of parasites that we know can change the behavior of the host? And how do they do that?
So, I mean, there are many examples of parasite changing the behavior of their hosts and many ways of that. I think this is just also the question about diversity, and there's a lot we don't even know. And some examples are really obvious, but then there might be more subtle things also that we just haven't thought about or we don't know about yet.
So it is the parasite in my brain changing my behavior.
We don't know if you have a parasite in your brain. There's no telemedicine here.
I have plausible deniability. That's what I take away from this. Yeah. I want that t-shirt.
that's a really interesting point, because like in order for us to be able to tell whether or not there's a change of behavior, we have to have enough evidence of the behavior pre-parasite infection. We also then have to know when they were infected by parasites. And the only way to know for sure when the parasite infection happens is to do it in a lab environment. But that might change the behavior of the animals anyways, because they're not in their natural habitat. So
yeah,
because like the other parasite that I know about, and I thought you were going here, but you went for a different parasite, is there's a fungus that infects small insects, also ants. And once it's ready to flower, it makes the ant crawl up a tree or somewhere high up so that it flowers out of the ant's body, literally kind of beautifully and slightly disgustingly blowing the ant up into a home for the flowering body of the mushroom. And that's where it releases the spores. And it wants to be quite high up so it can release the spores into the breeze so that the spores can travel very far. That's why it uses the ant to climb up to a higher location. And that's a really obvious example of change of behavior. Yeah. Because we can see the ant with the mushroom growing out of it, which is visually very obvious.
Super smart. I'm often thinking about these things from the parasite point of view. Like what would you do if you were the parasite? I mean, it's like a fairy tale stories and adventures that they have. Yeah. Parasite adventure.
I like that. So these are all very gross and disgusting and interesting and fascinating. And I may regret asking this. What is the grossest parasite that you know of?
I'm sorry.
Like the
I'm
most
sorry.
Disgusting.
Wait, no, I'm going to do a really quick behind the scenes moment. So
okay.
Listeners of the podcast, there was a brief moment just then where we, something went wrong with recording. We had to go off. Alex is offline and could not hear the conversation me and Pico were having, where we were talking about how whenever she talks to people about parasites, they're always super interested to know what is gross and disgusting. And we were just talking about how it's sometimes kind of cool and beautiful and interesting because parasites make a home in another species. And so the timing of that, Alex, was so good because you couldn't hear us talking about that. Yes.
Yeah, no. And I went.
The question will come, and I would actually, I would give you a counter question. Do you ask if you had a guest who talks about flowers or baby mammals? Do you ask what is the grossest or the most disgusting flower?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, to be fair, with the marine biologist episode, yes, Alex had his favorite animal completely destroyed for him. So like, yeah, kind of, we do this a lot.
Yeah. But you're exactly right. What is the most disgusting flower? There's the one that smells like a rotting corpse.
The corpse one. Definitely the corpse one. For sure.
Yeah. That might be considered. Yeah. But parasites, for me, I really cannot name a parasite that I feel is disgusting or gross like that. I feel like they are more like fascinating and interesting and in their own ways beautiful. I mean, some of them live in a way or in places in their host that we may find a little bit unpleasant or would not want to be that host. And I would say, of course, the disease is, it's not cool. It's not, that's not nice of them. Mm-mm. But I would actually say more about the beauty of parasites. What is the most beautiful parasite?
Okay, what is the most beautiful parasite?
Well, here I'm biased. I have to answer Toxoplasma gondii to this too, because I've been cultivating them in cell cultures, and that's so beautiful. I was just like staring at the microscope and looking at them. So they are microscopically small. If you have just one of them, it's like a banana shape. And then when it's grows there, it becomes like a coffee bean, like two together. And then it continues multiplying and it becomes like a flower. It's actually flowers. We come back to the flowers. So there's like flowers inside these cells. And well, then it gets a bit, what might be said, disgusting, that if it grows too much, and this is in cell culture, so there's no immunity stopping it. So then it will just basically have to at some point come outside the cell and it destroys the cell where it was. And then all those little ones go to new cells. But I would say, I mean, it's very beautiful. When it's a cell is full of these parasites in this chronic stage that the host can have in their brain, if you look at that on a microscope slide, it is like a full moon. You can just see the round thing with little dots inside. So there's beauty in that.
Have you heard of the YouTube channel Welcome to the Microcosmos?
Yeah.
It's really cool. It is like a YouTube channel where you dive into the microscopic universe and they teach you the science about what you're seeing and everything. The vibe of it is like kind of meditative and chill. It's got really nice music, really genuinely beautiful footage, and then like very calming science facts. But it's really cool. I'll put a link in the doobly-doo for this episode. But it's another like cool, beautiful, microscopic thing.
Certainly. There's so much we don't see when we are just go around without a microscope. But I would like to bring us back to the sea otters, because do you know there's a link for sea otters in Toxoplasma?
No. It's amazing.
Well, actually, sea otters are one of those animals that seems to be highly susceptible to get like really sick and even die from Toxoplasma infection. Mm-hmm. It's quite a sad story in that sense. There's some studies from the US, California about this, and it seems to be that it's basically our fault, humans' fault, because the way we have cats, and the cats get the infection and the cat feces are not burned, and then they go to the environment and flush off to the sea, and then these sea otters get it from there and they might die from it. So it's actually like an environmental problem for them. Yeah.
Oh no, that's terrible.
Yeah.
So I also know some people, like, you can get the flushable cat litter. So that's not a good idea if you live in an environment near sea otters.
No. Oh, no. The cat feces, they should be in a household waste, because then they go to a more like a limited place somewhere. Or then, the burning is not really practical. We should not be advising that. But no flushing down the toilet of cat feces, and no, not letting them go around in the environment. Otherwise, no to the neighbor's gardens and not to the places where there are sea otters. So yeah, that's a sad story, actually. There's a link. This is the thing about nature. Everything is interconnected, even your episodes, in ways you didn't expect. We talk about toxoplasma and parasites, and then we talk about marine mammals.
That's amazing.
All connected. Amazing. Yeah.
Speaking of beauty and maybe even, you know, helpful parasites.
Yeah.
I read this story 20 years ago on the internet, so it must be true. But apparently there was this tech guy in the US.
Wait, we had the internet 20 years ago?
Yeah. It was infancy, but it was yeah, absolutely, Katie. Some of us were there when it was when it happened. Yeah. So this guy, he had like really bad asthma.
Yeah.
And found it hard to live with that. Asthma is basically an autoimmune disease, right?
Yeah,
I have
that
correctly.
Yeah. Okay. Basically, your body just wants to stop breathing. It just closes up the bronchial tracts and just like, no, don't need to let air in.
So his attempt at a treatment was to fly to Africa and take off his shoes and walk around in an open air toilet, because there's this parasite that then drills into your feet through the skin, goes into your bloodstream, I think. At some point, it will exit in the back of your throat. You'll feel like this tickling, you'll start coughing. It attaches to the blood vessels in there and starts sucking the blood. But what it also does is it lowers your immune response, so it won't get rejected by the host body. So he actually found that while he was infected with this parasite, his disease went away, or was a lot better. The problem was that the parasite can't reproduce inside the human body. It needs to go out with the feces and then reinfect somebody else later on. So it was only like a temporary measure. And he tried to buy this parasite from labs and they wouldn't let him. So basically his only solution was barefoot walks in open air toilets in Africa. Did I make this up, Pika? Is that something that could have happened, or?
There was a few tiny little facts a bit off about, I think this actually is a parasite that would go into intestines then to stay. But yeah, it is modulating our immune responses to have parasites, because that is usually a chronic infection. And there is the discussion or a balance between the parasite and the host. And there are some studies of this, and I would not recommend doing it like that by yourself, like walking in these planes. That's a no-go. But there are actually work done on this too. So it could be even a treatment for some diseases like that.
I will say, as a lifelong haver of asthma, there are some great actual medicine in the market that you can use every day, and it's definitely not a parasite. If anyone has asthma, please do not follow the advice of a person on the internet from 20 years ago. Just take your steroids.
You would not advise taking a barefoot walk in an African open-air toilet then?
I would not advise that. I think it's for many parasites, mainly we should avoid getting infected for most of those that we know well.
Probably, yes.
In the relationship between parasite and host, it's better to be the parasite than the host, from what I understand.
Well, it comes up to how the host is behaving, if they are a good host. So I was saying, what is a good parasite is one that doesn't cause too much trouble, but what is a good host then would be one that stays healthy long, so provides the home for it. It's also like one of the next steps for the parasites in the life cycles, because different hosts may have a different role in which life cycle and the story. So yeah, good host would be helping the parasites. From the parasite point of view.
Yeah, be a friendly host to your local parasite. Yeah. Awesome. I thought of a question. What's the name mean? Toxoplasma gondii? Where does that come from?
That's a good question. It is actually misspelled from the original. The toxon part of it means like a bow, is the shape of it. And
so then... not a toxin.
No, it's the shape, like a bow. And then the gondii, actually, it was found in 1908 from a rodent that is called, similar, it's called gundi, but they misspelled it, so it became gondii. And they kept the name.
The absolute disrespect towards this parasite, yeah. Not only are we going to try to eradicate you, we're also going to misspell you.
That's it.
Was there any like other like little snippets about parasites or anything else that you wanted to mention to our listeners? Or is there anything else that you feel like we missed out on?
I would like to maybe mention that in my life and my career, like you started in the beginning, that I work with infectious diseases preparedness and One Health. And I think that I have been working with parasites. It has been really teaching me a lot about these fields, to understand how things are interconnected, and also how we live with these pathogens and microorganisms. There's a lot of cool and fascinating things, but also it's like we always have to stay humble and understand that we don't know it all, and there's so much. And then also about the parasites and pathogens, that we don't only think about them as something gross or disgusting, but they can be fascinating, beautiful. We can be enthusiastic about them, and they are also part of the biodiversity, actually. So it's also about kind of understanding they are here. We share these planets with parasites.
Wow,
that's beautiful. Thank
that
you so much.
And I love your enthusiasm about it. I think it's fascinating. I think it's fantastic.
Thanks.
So, Ika, if somebody is interested in learning more about parasites, if this conversation sparked a little bit of curiosity, where can they go?
First step could be maybe just the internet that we discussed. There's a lot of stuff, but maybe try to find a little bit newer stuff than the 20 years old. So to find some interesting stories. And I would encourage to talk with a parasitologist, somebody who is in the field and can share some like really interesting things, because it is usually the small details that are super cool. There's many things, so it's easy to find something. Somehow parasites actually come closer to many of us than we may think. So we all may be having a cat or might be interested in sea otters or something, and suddenly there's a parasite that links these.
And if somebody wanted to learn more about your work, Pika, where should we send them?
Well, for example, I'm on Twitter, so that's a place to find something. I share some news. For example, on Toxoplasma, right now I'm leading a European research consortium on Toxoplasma, where we look at the ways humans in Europe get infected by Toxoplasma gondii. What are the sources? So that's called Toxosources. We have a lot of new research results coming out.
That's so cool.
Very cool. Pika, this has been both fascinating and super interesting and a little bit gross. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, Katie, if somebody loved this episode, what other episodes of ours do you think they should also listen to?
I feel like anything that we had Yo on and we talked about marine mammals, like I feel like the direct connection to sea otters was perfect. And I feel like that's a great place to go next. Check out the first episode of marine mammals and then the second episode on animal mating habits, because that's also very weird.
Yeah. And if I can add one that goes in a completely different direction, our BioShock episode.
I can totally see that.
Yeah, right? Classic computer game BioShock, where parasites actually feature as a key part of the story, a key part of the world that this story takes place in. Yeah, the BioShock computer game.
Super cool. Awesome. And also, I love a out there suggestion where the next episode suggested is completely random. I love one of those. So good.
Completely different. Yeah. Excellent.
I have the smallest amount of roundup, which is on our last episode, when we revisited Triple R, my favorite comment in the world was someone called DDP commented, "Enough attention to Katie. Alex is cute too. People raid his Insta this time." Now, I'm not saying people should raid your Insta, but I do think we should appreciate the cuteness and the fashion icon that sits before us with the best collection of shirts I've ever seen in my life. Like, there is very rarely a repeat of beautiful shirts, and there is like a consistent amount of beautiful, colorful, button-down short sleeve shirts. And I feel like we need to recognize and honor the beauty and the cuteness before us.
Thank you. Thank you. I feel so seen right now.
My, I think Pico wants to join in.
Comment on that this shirt with the flowers. So I would recommend a parasite shirt. You should certainly get a shirt with parasites, so you would be sharing and you know, radiating the beauty of parasites also. That would be my recommendation.
Is there such a thing? Do you have an Etsy shop where you sell parasite t-shirts and parasite merch? Or where would I go to get my parasite?
We will need to navigate that, but I'm sure we'll find something.
Yeah, it's the internet. I'm sure we'll find it.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. DDP, thank you for that comment. Yes, please go to my Instagram and tell me how cute I am. I would love that, honestly. Doesn't happen often enough. Thank you. And Katie, thank you so much for saying that.
I feel like we should recognize the cuteness.
So, dear listener, we hope you enjoyed sharing one of our new enthusiasms in this episode with our amazing guest, Pika. Please visit our website, electricenthusiasm.com, or find us on Instagram, @electricenthusiasm, to discover more episodes or to leave a comment.
And now, go make sure you're a beautiful home for a potential future parasite. Because you got to be healthy and look after your immune system, and then you will be a good home.
This is like the new call to action for healthy living and exercise, right? Do you want to make a shitty home for your tapeworm? You don't, do you?
Because if you're a bad home, shape. Then the parasite might infect you and make it worse. So be a good, healthy home. Look after yourself and your cats.
Yeah. And burn your cat poo. Oh, that should have been the end. No.
That should be the ender. And now, dear listener, go out and burn some cat poop.